AsiaFitnessToday.com presents the Kurang Manis podcast, a 40-minute talk show in English and light doses of Bahasa Malaysia, Penang Hokkien, and various other languages in future. We talk about everything sports, fitness, and wellness from the Asia-Pacific region and beyond. A documentary first, Ready Fusion inspired, raw as can be chit-chat show with athletes, medical doctors, allied health professionals, and the fitness and wellness world. You. It's a show about us. We tell your stories as they happen in our lives. Join us every so often and bring your cup of tea. In Malaysia, it's the teh tarik, made frothy by the swift hand movements of a tea pulling expert and just a mere 8 teaspoons of sugar. Boss, kurang manis ya? See you soon. When in Australia, we acknowledge the traditional owners of the country, the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation, and recognise their continuing connection to land, waters and culture. We pay our respects to their elders past, present and emerging. Crossing over to Malaysia in Kuala Lumpur at 6 a.m. and to Colombia at 5 p.m. How are you, Nicole? Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for joining us. How are you feeling today?
Good. Yeah, keeping busy. It's been quite busy the last 2 days with the news. So
exactly.
But it's been amazing.
You know, I was with my nephew's tennis coach yesterday. And I mentioned your name. And he's like, yeah, why have I heard that name before? Nicole David. Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, she's the GOAT. Congratulations, Nicole. How does it feel to be GOAT, greatest athlete of all time? And that's a huge accolade. Congratulations.
Thank you. It feels amazing. I think it was more overwhelming actually getting the response from Malaysia, everyone around, all the squash community around the world, all voting for me and cheering me on every single day. And up to the point where they finally made the announcement that that I could get through and to win it was, it was very special to get this support back home and also to see that that the recognition and the honor being the greatest athlete of all time is pretty, pretty a thrill for me.
Well, I think from what I understand, I watched the Ask Me Any Question sort of interview done by the Professional Squash Association. A big call out to them as well. Thank you so much to PSA and also the World Games for connecting us. In that interview, that was in May, isn't it, 2020, and you were still in Colombia.
There was also a live session, I think, on PSA.
Yes.
Yeah, it was quite a while ago.
and you shared actually quite a lot of very interesting things, like how your dad actually chopped a squash racket so that you could hold it at age 5.
Yeah, it was, he actually got his friend to help him out to get an old squash racket, old wooden squash racket, and cut it into half and made it smaller. So I had a mini personalized squash racket for myself, which came about perfectly because at the time there were no squash rackets suitable for my height. I was the same height as the racket, so they had to find a way to make me a mini racket for me.
Such great love from a dad, huh?
Yeah, it really is.
That's how it starts, you know, love, you know, that the dad has got for their child and sport. You know, I started the same way as well. My mother really liked exercise and And what happened was that during school holidays when we were kids, she's like tearing her hair out with all these kids running around. So she's like, oh, come put us all in the car. And we started to go hiking with her. And that's how I got into the fitness industry.
Oh, great.
Yeah,
it's a family thing. My dad and my mom, they were very supportive with us playing sport because my dad was a former athlete himself, playing for Malaysian football as a goalkeeper. And also he played field hockey and he ran in as a sprinter for the Penang State. So a lot of things came, I think the genes in our family came from there, but my dad, but I think my mom as a teacher, when she was teaching, had a lot of patience to put up with myself, the hyper one in the house. So they had to find ways to keep me occupied, and squash was one of the sports that got me going. And also my two older sisters played it as well.
Were they hyper as well?
Not as hyper as me. I was the extreme hyper kid in the family.
You know, Nicole, we're catching up now like a year into the new normal. This N word is so funny, right? New normal. Everyone's just accepted it. And look at us now. We're on Zoom, you know, like we're halfway across the world in different time zones. But it feels like we're all in a room together. Was there something that you did, you know, to stay sane during all this time? Your mental health, what did you do?
I feel that sport really helped me to understand what comes with like the stresses or having the anxiety or feeling sad or angry in those times where you are actually cooped up in your own place. I think I developed some mental strength skills through training and practicing on a daily basis when I was competing. And I think everybody can do that, but it's just being aware of when I'm not feeling good and I'm feeling sad or anxious, not to go through the emotions, but at the same time it's okay to go through it, but the next day you can come out of it and start afresh. So by doing that, creating a routine, having a program set, keeping active, working out in the house, so that I didn't go so crazy. That keeps me actually more sane when I'm active and doing things. So that kept my mind free. And I think that I think that whole time has helped me to also understand that what I've learned has come into play when I'm in this situation. And it has helped me a lot for sure. And being more compassionate about the people around you, the people who are away, and you know, reaching out to people if they need help, or they can do it in return if you want. You have to speak to people, talk about your emotions, and share. That's important.
Thank you. For friends who've just joined us from across the world, we are now at 9 o'clock sharp. In Sydney time, 6 o'clock in KL time, and 5 p.m. on the 4th of February in Colombia. If you've just joined us, we're here with Nicole David, world number one squash champion. Do you like that tag? And now, listen for it, the World Games greatest athlete of all time. How long do you get to keep that title, Nicole? Is it forever?
Well, I think when you get it, I think that's what you get.
Exactly.
I'm not sure if it's like they're going to take it back, but I think it's each year they have a different athlete. So I'm very, very proud of that achievement, very overwhelmed and thrilled at the same time, having so much support back home from Malaysia, my family and my friends cheering me on from afar.
And they sure did. I could see Malaysians going crazy, like they were so excited. And not just Malaysians, I think the squash community as well, because we were watching an interview with you, I think it was the British Open, 2014.
Mm-hmm.
From that time, 2014 until now, 6 years later, what were the key developments from the time you said, you know, I'm going to hang up my squash racket? What were the three key developments?
I think 2014 was a year that was a big year because we had two world championships at the time. One was in Penang for the 2013 World Championships, and I lost in my hometown in the semifinals to Noral Shabini, and that hit me pretty hard. But no doubt that actually gave me a kickstart to really challenge myself to push through the year, because I had the Commonwealth Games, Asian Games, World Teams, and World Championships at the end of the year. So, and all the rest of the World Tour final tournaments to play. So I motivated myself to keep to task. And the British Open was a big win for me, losing the year before coming back. So after that year, I think something kind of changed. Like, you know, I saw that, I think the hunger just kind of lost in me, but I didn't really feel it. And throughout that time, I was probably going through a phase of not knowing what's going on, maybe a bit lost, and had my downtime as well, like being a bit depressed because I was losing. I lost my number one position. So all that process actually got me to a point that, you know what, it's time for me to let go of my squash and move on to a new path in my life. So that's that whole time until the moment I retired was such a place of growth, of me letting go of my squash, but at the same time embracing what's coming for myself and seeing what I can do next. That made me more excited about the next phase of my life. So all these experiences made me a more all-round person and a more wholesome person, and I truly understood myself better.
Yeah, you know, we're made out of experiences, huh? So you've mastered your craft really, really well in the sports. Squash is a sports that you're so skillful in. How does knowing that you've been gifted with these skills, apart from squash, that has made you who you are today, inspire you to channel them towards your purpose here? Like, we've got a purpose. Everybody's got a purpose here on Earth.
Yeah, I felt that when I was playing squash from the very beginning, I just loved it so much that I wanted to see myself improve and get better and see me getting stronger and started beating my sisters, which was great to see. And yay! Exactly. Exactly. And when I could break through those milestones, I wanted to see how far I could push myself to go further. So the hunger kept growing when I was younger, from the passion and the talent that I had. I made the most of what I got. And also I was given a lot of encouragement from SRAM, the coaches there. They saw the potential in me that, you know, we can put we can really make you go somewhere with funding and with support from the National Sports Council and everyone coming in. So I used that to my advantage. So I went, right, I'm gonna push my my barriers and reach for the skies and see where I go. So but it starts from there, and I think I didn't know that I could get to this point, but with the blessings of my parents to let me train overseas with a top squash coach, Liz Irving from Australia. She was the real turning point of really molding me to become the ultimate squash player that I can be, to go to as far as I've gone to in my whole squash career.
I've got this question, actually. That's a lot of skills and gift that goes into being who you are today, being who Nicole David is, right? I'm curious, what skill are you disproportionately good at? Just one skill, apart from sports or squash. If you were to teach a course today, what would that be?
I would say maybe mental training, or, you know, or positive psychology. I actually, with the time I had, I managed to study a specialization online on positive psychology and to understand more the science and the application of what I have used. Like, you know, and it's actually, everyone has it. Everyone has a strong mind. It's just a matter of practicing and actually knowing that they do have a strong mindset. It's just about cultivating it, doing daily practices. And if I could teach people to just work on their strengths and in what they have already, then I hope I can inspire them to be better. Not just to think for themselves that they can be strong enough to push their barriers as well.
You know, Nicole, we are all Malaysians here in this room currently. Even though you're all the way in Colombia, I'm very curious. It's 5 p.m. What did you just eat?
I had chicken and some lentils and rice.
Lentils,
So it was very yummy.
Do you know, today is also a significant day. Well, not for you yet because it's 4/2, but today it's 5/2.
Yeah.
And a lot of people have been talking about this 5/2 diet. Have you heard of it?
5/2, okay.
It's like fasting for 2 days.
Haven't.
It's like eating 5 days and then fasting for 2 days, intermittent fasting.
Yes, I've heard.
Have you ever done any of these diets before as an athlete? Do you ever use any of these as part of your training?
For me, I actually needed fuel every time because squash was very demanding on the body. So I was working hard every day, like two sessions a day, two to 4 hour sessions or in total. So my body needed just food constantly. And as a squash player, I had to keep replacing it. So I couldn't actually survive on any kind of fasting because it wouldn't have worked. And I haven't done it also currently, but I think the best thing that I have learned from like nutritionists through the Sports Institute of Malaysia and also having nutritionists along the way in my career, they just pointed out the basic necessity is that you have to have a balanced diet. For me, to make sure you eat the 3 meals a day for me, and I really feel whatever my body needs at the time, whether if I'm doing weights, I feel like, oh, I need to eat more protein. My body actually tells me on the spot, so I'm quite aware with what my body tells me. It doesn't say like, oh, eat more chocolate, you know. It's not. But you have those moments. But I don't eat like that every day.
Not durians.
I always feel like if I need more carbs, I'll eat more carbs, like maybe pasta or rice or whatever that my body tells me that it needs to refuel.
So you know the typical Malaysian diet when you were young.
Yeah.
What were like your favorite foods around the family and for yourself as well and your sisters?
So my typical, firstly, I never liked eating growing up because I was so hyper, I couldn't sit down to eat a food, my meal properly. So I used to travel with my sisters and the squash team, and the whole team will be waiting for me to finish my chicken rice, and I will still be stuck there, you know, trying to gobble this down. But now you give me chicken rice, I finish it in 5 minutes. So, but I think my favorite meal with the family, my mom cooks really well. So she always makes like good curry, chicken curry, or she'll make good with the roti jala, or, you know, I think that's one of our favorites as a family. And also, you know, and so many things that but when I come back home, she will make like a chili crab or something because she wants to make
crab.
It very special when I'm back home.
Wow.
Yeah.
I love very spicy, spoiled. So.
Chili crab or sambal petai. So that's very Malaysian.
Oh, wow. Sambal petai, by the way, for
yes.
Australians and non-Malaysians listening, Google the word petai. It's a smelly little, is it even a fruit?
Smelly green beans.
It's a bean, but it's
like a broad beans.
And it cleanses your liver, apparently.
and it stays in your system for 3 days, but it's okay.
You know what? Here's a message to Mrs. David, if you're listening, Mr. and Mrs. David. I think you might need to specialize in a YouTube cooking channel and make
cooking
Nicole's favorite goat curry. Sorry, I know chicken I'm quite
curry.
Corny.
Yeah.
Goat, not chicken, because now you are the goat, ma'am.
Only goat. Yeah.
Well,
yeah, no, she does it really well.
Nikki, I think you have any more questions to Nicole about food?
Yeah. Malaysians are always talking about food. Either we're talking about it or we're eating and we're talking about what we're going to be eating the next meal.
Yeah.
Or we're actually watching people cooking, you know. What's your relationship with food?
Well, being a Penangite, I think everything revolves around food. When I visit friends, actually, I used to go to Australia a little to do some summer training. And when I meet up with I have a lot of Malaysian friends there that study. So when I catch up with them, I'll be like, you know, oh, you remember this Penang, you know, this ice kacang place or the chendol place. I remember lunch char kway teow place, but not this place. So it's literally that there was one meal that we were talking about, reminiscing about Penang food all throughout the evening. So that's like kind of Penang is like food is like religion in some ways. But it's the best thing. We talk about everything evolving about food.
Yeah.
You know,
it's fun.
The concept of the Kurang Manis project, it is our ambition and our mission, actually, to try and get as many Malaysians as we can to halve their intake of sugar. So you see that big teh tarik behind me?
Kurang Manis.
Kurang Manis. I used to actually crave and hanker for at least 4 teh tarik Kurang Manis.
Wow.
Or recently I would go to the boss and say, boss, kurang manis, okay? And I would ask him, boss, the teh tarik that's not kurang manis, the normal one, how many teaspoons of sugar is in there? And he would tell me only 8 lah, girl. 8 teaspoons of sugar, condensed milk.
And it's not 8 condensed milk, yeah.
8 teaspoons of condensed milk. I mean, it's not bad for you, but I think if you have 4 in a day, that's really over your sugar intake. And I got really depressed because I had my BMI taken and my body mass index. I'm actually considered obese. So my nephew and my brothers love laughing at me and call me obese. Chinese New Year is around the corner. And, you know, my aunties...
That's all they just love to
eat. You know. But you wouldn't have that problem.
No, but still, you know, it's not fair. Don't tease.
Don't tease, that's right. I just saw that ad that you appeared in. It was a very nice ad, I have to say. Well done.
The Chinese New Year.
Yeah, the Chinese New Year one. Love it. But, you know, if you're not from Malaysia or if you don't celebrate Chinese New Year, usually when it's Chinese New Year or the Lunar New Year, which is on the 12th of February, I believe, we're crossing from the rat's tail. Here we are at the rat's tail, rat's end of the year. Mm-hmm. And we're crossing over to the year of the ox. A very sturdy year, I think, that we're going into. So relatives would gather around the dining table on the eve at the reunion dinner. What are you doing on Chinese New Year for reunion dinner, Nicole?
Currently, I'm going to be in Colombia still. Maybe I'll have a delayed Chinese New Year. But my family usually gathers around either in my mom's sister's house or before. We used to go over to Kulim or Butterworth too, because that's where my mom's family, a lot of them stay. And on the Chinese side, they will have whether it's a steamboat or everyone makes something and we have a full table of food all the time. But I think this year they'll just be doing something smaller, either within the smaller scale, like just the immediate family, and just buying some food and now we even have we sometimes have tomato rice and curry to go with the meal for.
I love that
because everybody likes curry and tomato rice, and then they will just add my aunt and my grandmother used to make this special kiam chai boy, which is and it's the ultimate. So we always wait for Chinese New Year for that
kiam chai boy.
My mom now is.
Kiam chai boy is a Hokkien word.
Sweet sour.
It's like a bouillabaisse, or in Spanish, I think they have a dish very similar as well. It's got mixed like yesterday's ingredients with bones and marrow, and it's really thick broth.
Nicole,
lu eo kong Hokkien wa bo?
Tampuk. Everything is like huan jiu jie.
Not my huan jiu.
Extra.
Do you miss home?
I do at times, but I've been away all my life. Since I was 18, I lived in Amsterdam for 18 years, and now in Colombia for nearly 3 years. So I think that for me, being away has always been normal, but it was my first time being away for 1 year from Malaysia. So I'm looking forward to going back next month.
Nicole, I'd like to also welcome our next guest, Dr. Desmond Menon. So he's a medical lab scientist. And Dr. Desmond, hello, how are you, Des?
good, yourselves?
Very good. Desmond is actually originally from Singapore. His mum is a former athlete from Perak. Based in Perth. So, Desmond, you have a question for Nicole?
Yes, I do. Nice to meet you, by the way.
Nice to meet you too.
Your undertakings, awesome. For my question, as an athlete, your body is constantly being challenged to maintain peak performance, and being able to ensure that your competitiveness and your longevity in the sport. So. I'm guessing, needless to say, at your level, unlike the everyday athlete, there's probably a strict regimen that you have to adhere to, even when it's off season, to ensure that you keep healthy. As those sort of effects sort of carry over to your next season, recovery and readiness and whatnot. So, can you maybe tell us what is done to monitor and understand how well your body functions internally to ensure your body, it's functioning at its optimum to benefit from the training that you're going to do off season and also cope with the challenges during the competition season?
Yeah, well, basically, I would start a year and that's happens with all the squash players, and I think the other athletes in Malaysia as well. We'll do a fitness test in the beginning of the year, so we would make sure that we will see what is lacking, what needs to be strengthened. And then there'll be a training program that will be set specifically for my body type. If like my left side is not as strong, so we have to emphasize on how am I going to strengthen the left side of my body, because squash is very one-dimensional all the time. So, we go into very specifics. When it comes to in the beginning of my career, it was very basic, like get stronger, all around strength. And then when you get to world number one, it's like, okay, now it's refinement. So every small thing counts. So if I'm getting stronger now, how am I going to get more explosive? Like all these factors are being counted in my program, and that program will be put into like 3 or 4 different phases. So beginning of the year for the first quarter towards a tournament, and then the middle of the year, off-season. So off-season training is actually even heavier training because you got time to build your base. So more like heavier weights, stronger, like things that you do more endurance, longer periods. And then when it's closer to a competition, you go fast switch stuff. So like more quick stuff and everything's explosive, and then it's a lot. But then that's not including the squash side yet. So that's just building the physical aspect, and then the squash stuff, you have your development of the technical side and whatnot. And all these things is just training, but then I have a lot of recovery with my physios. Every week I'll have a physio session, and when I got older, I'll have 2 sessions in a week or 3 sessions every two days. Mm-hmm. Because then my body needs to recover, and in competition I get a physio to work on my body before the match to get me ready, and then a recovery session after. So all these things have to be in place to make sure my body's in optimum performance state.
Well, thanks. Does anything get done from a blood work perspective to understand whether or not you're pushing too much or not enough or everything? So you get blood work done as well?
Yeah, like lactic acid. We do like our VO2 max test, and usually I always have like a very high, I don't know, high tolerance for some reason, but my heart rate is quite high, but for some reason I still push the threshold. It's somehow it seems abnormal, but it's just how it is. And but training wise, it doesn't seem to go down. Like I just keep working on a very high threshold rate.
That's where you are.
yeah. But what helps me a lot is that I do a lot of high intensity training, but then it's according to like stages. So I have to make sure I don't high intensity all the way the week, because my body will break down. It's like medium, high, low, so that it's staggered to recover. Recovery is the most important thing, like sleeping well, making sure I get enough rest in between my sessions so that I can push for the next session. So all these things are very important. My sleep, I'm called the queen of sleep with my coach.
No, sleep is definitely important. They say sleep is when your body actually sort of reinforces all those connections that you've made. So, yeah, that's the best thing. Which is probably why I won't be an elite athlete, because my sleep is horrible. So.
Thinking too much, bro.
No, thanks. Thanks very much for answering my question.
That's good.
He definitely does think a lot, and I have really enjoyed all the conversations I've had with Desmond, because we'll actually be talking to Desmond right after you leave us. I think we have still another 6 minutes with you, Nicole, so we're going to stretch that 6 minutes and see. And we will leave you respectfully. Thank you so much for actually spending time with us. I really appreciate it, because we're an independent small shop. We're not a big Rupert Murdoch or big media firm. We're just a small shop, two girls who are everyday people, and we just want to be able to tell other people's stories, tell your stories the way it's told, in a different way, in a real way. And thank you so much for being so honest and down to earth with us. Des, stay on there, please. Don't go away.
Absolutely.
Nicole, we have this thing that we wanted to talk to you about, and it's about being fit for good. So we came up with this phrase. What's the point of running like so many marathons, when you can actually use your fitness for good? So I know that you've done something. You've appointed a very expensive consulting firm to handle that foundation for you too. Tell us more.
Well, my foundation, I'm actually working with the team here in Colombia, and also they will be obviously working in Malaysia. And basically the foundation is focused on empowering girls and boys through values of sport, and using squash as the basis of sport to reach out to these kids. And all the experiences that I've had from squash has developed me as a person, creating all these values, these strong fundamental values that you can actually instill in these children through sport. So I want my foundation to hopefully inspire more children to be active and keep healthy, but also at the same time develop the values that sport can give. And that's the idea. And it's not to create top squash players. It's for them to understand that if you are part of this community, of this group of in the foundation, you can be you can just take on the good stuff that will help you in your own way, in your own life. So these values will actually last a lifetime. And I'm very sure my squash experience have given me that for my lifetime. And I want to do that for the rest of the kids that come on board on the foundation. So hopefully things will, when I go back to Malaysia, I can get like steps moving with the registration, and then with time permits with all the lockdown and quarantine, hopefully things may come in later in a year or maybe in 2022.
Is there a website for your foundation?
At the moment, it's in the process. So I still have to register. Yeah, still on the process of registration right now. So things are moving for sure.
What's the best way for people to connect with you if they'd like to help you or, you know, share your impact work? Is there something or some way that they can connect with you? Is there a website or an email?
Well, now I'm going to put everything up on my own personal social media. Everything is going to be updated there. So until everything is more like fixed and ready, I will definitely be sharing with the world, with Malaysia and with you guys to definitely like cheer on the foundation.
Nikki, over to you.
I was just wondering, is there, if you were to, one last question. Who would you like to see on this show and why? Who would you like to see next on the show? Yeah.
Probably if you have, I think there's quite a lot of people that you can pick on to speak and talk about.
You know what? May I answer for you, Nicole?
Yeah.
May I suggest Mrs. David? I would love to meet your mom.
Yeah, my parents. Your dad. My parents. But something. Sure, you can have them on.
Yeah, we would love to meet them.
You'll have to truly her recipe.
Her recipe. Yeah. Mestilah. I think on that note, I'd like to also. Yeah, I love the idea that you've set up this foundation to work with young women. In squash, I think before you even ventured into that field, I think it was very rare. In fact, you were the first Asian woman to have ever won one of the titles early on, I think in the 90s or something like that. And I think everybody was so excited. So we're not even going to talk about the Olympics. We will focus on the World Games. I like how you mentioned that in one of your interviews before, that you would not trade all of your medals for one Olympic medal anymore.
Change
your mind. And it's fine to change your mind. But, you know, as a sort of end note to seal off this interview with you, I'd like to actually call out to all of our mothers, all of us, because I think mothers, and they don't even have to be that person who actually bore you in their womb, you know. Mothers are caregivers. Caregivers, nurturers of sorts. I think the people in your life have done a great job, and to that note, what you're trying to do now with your foundation is you are now being the mother through your foundation to all these kids. And I really love that. I really wish you all the best.
Well, yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to all that's in store. There's a lot of things coming up, a lot of projects happening. So very exciting times to come in the next few years.
Thank you, Nicole David. The World Games greatest athlete of all time, a Malaysian, a Penangite, a down-to-earth woman with a foundation to help young ladies. Stay tuned. I think we will be hearing from you very soon. I'm excited to see what you're up to next.
Thanks so much, Jasmine and Nikki, for all the questions and having me on your show. And nice meeting you, Desmond. And you take care. Enjoy the rest of the show. Bye.
Ciao.
Bye.
conclusion of every show, we'll introduce music from singer-songwriters from around the region. And in this round, we introduce Amrita Soon, a young singer-songwriter who once had a dream of visiting Nashville, Tennessee, when she met us, myself Jasmine, and Nikki, who at that time ran a music cafe and open mic events. Amrita has since released 2 albums and performed in Malaysia, China, Nashville, and even sang at the renowned Bluebird Cafe. We present you with this pilot episode of the Kurang Manis podcast by AsiaFitnessToday.com. We've tried our best to unproduce it so it's raw and as unedited as it can be.
Darling, the days are long, the years It's so immensely rewarding to meet with people so fired up with passion and strong purpose that when you're in their company, even an ant could feel like they could change the world. I've been in the presence of these magnificent humans and have witnessed how so amazing they are, leaving a trail of light for those who follow the path. And this is the aspiration of the Kurang Manis podcast, to bring you conversations with persons from Asia and Pacific who are world-class at their vocation and share their path to mastery, their daily habits, their new normal, and how they strive to leave a legacy for others to continue on. Join us on our next episode as we speak with yet another inspiring guest. Could it be you, perhaps?